Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and parents, families, educators, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront our lives sometime. We dive into issues that shape, challenge, and sometimes disrupt our everyday lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield, so welcome to 411 Teen. Joining us today is Dr. Michael Crawford, one of three authors, Dr. Lynn Carroll and Dr. Paula Gilroy, of The Parent Pivot, providing insight, support, and hope for parents whose young adult children are struggling emotionally, mentally, or behaviorally. Dr. Crawford is a licensed psychologist in Maine. She's worked with young adults in the university setting in counseling and human relations. She initiated a program for parents of young adults heading to college and has also worked with parents facing the challenges of pivoting from caregiver role with changing boundaries. Dr. Michael Crawford, welcome to 411 Teen.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Liz.
Well, I am looking so forward to talking with you. I think I read your book. It just was full of invaluable information. What led you and your co-authors to focus on this period, this what is emerging adulthood?
Well, the interesting thing is, as we were shifting about for how to focus the book and where to land in terms of a topic, we found that there is very little written for parents once their children become 18. Yeah. Once they reach that magical stage where they are legally an adult, but as the parents know, they're not quite ready mm-hmm. for all the demands of adulthood. Mm-hmm. And so we decided that this would be a good area to focus on. But we also thought that we didn't want to write another parenting book. We wanted to write something that was more of a how do you take care of yourself, parent, as you navigate this new terrain. And so we went at this with an ear to and a mindset of self-care as mm-hmm. opposed to a parenting book. Mm-hmm.
Well, what is it about this particular developmental stage that makes folks so psychologically, I would say, vulnerable?
Well, I think in general, this age, this is a time when young adults are vulnerable anyway. Mm-hmm. They're making the transition from living at home for many of them, whether they go to college or not, to moving out, finding employment, kind of searching for a sense of where they want to go with their lives. And they don't always have the tools to make that transition successfully. For many of them, they are moving ahead, and their parents are learning in a parallel process to let go. But it's not always a comfortable move for either one. Parents struggle with it, I think, as much as the young adults do.
Amen. how does it differ from adolescence and adulthood? Because they are in that emerging adulthood. So mm-hmm. often, you know, parents think, and adults think 18 means independence. But you and I both know that that's not right.
Exactly. Well, the emerging adult, this is interesting to me. Jeffrey Arnett coined the term emerging adults, mm-hmm. adulthood, and he called this time not an extension of adolescence nor a pre-adulthood, but a distinct phase of development where young people, when they arrive at 18, move into this emerging adulthood where they're figuring out, you know, mm-hmm. what do I do with my life? Where do I want to go? How do I find gainful employment or some kind of meaningful purpose in my life? And how do I negotiate relationships and so forth. So he believes, and it makes a lot of sense to me, that this is a time, a distinct time in a young person's life when they're not fully adult, but they're no longer a child. They're not no longer even an adolescent. And so they're searching for, okay, what do I do? How do I make my stand in the world?
And I think you really have addressed that. Next question I was going to pose to you is, it really is a flawed assumption that 18 means independence.
Very much so, or even means that you are an adult.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
When you think that the adolescent brain, our brains as people, don't fully develop till we're 25, maybe 26, an 18-year-old, even though they're legally able to be in the driver's seat of their life, many times are not ready for that. They don't have the complex cognitive skills, if you will, to make the important decisions that they need to make. They still need support. They still need what we called, and when I was teaching elementary school, we called it scaffolding to help a child learn. Mm-hmm. And emerging adults also need this, not as much. And they don't need the hands-on scaffolding that we do with younger kids, but they still need support.
Would you share some of the signs of emotional or behavioral distress that one may see during this emerging adult period?
Sure. Well, you may see typical signs of anxiety or depression in the young adults. You may see them turning, we have a chapter in the book called Riding the Dragons. And these are the behaviors that we believe young people engage in an attempt to kind of handle the stress or the anxiety of moving forward when they're not quite sure they're ready to do so. So that you might see them engaging in certain behaviors like using substances or using too frequent use of the internet, risky behaviors, other kinds of things, which are typical of this age. But when you see them doing these more regularly, when you see them engaging in substances or living their lives on the internet or whatever, you have to stop and wonder, what are they avoiding? Mm-hmm. What is it that they're trying to handle? And to be honest, they are trying to handle their lives. But these dragons that we talk about are not necessarily the most effective way to do that.
Well, when we look at them and look at the variables that may contribute to these struggles, what role do things like social media and culture pressure and even academic or employment pressure. Mm-hmm. What are all these? Talk about those. How do they contribute to the struggles that these emerging adults are experiencing? I mean, let's look at just social media for a second. Mm-hmm. How does that impact us?
Well, social media, for better or for worse, is with us. And it can be a boon to young people in terms of connecting them with peers and helping them to know what's going on. But it can also be very impactful in a negative way when they start measuring themselves against other people, when they start looking at themselves and finding themselves lacking, when they find out that their friends are all out together and they're not there. You know, we've seen a lot of cyberbullying and a lot of people, because when you're online, you can make comments that you probably would never make when you were face-to-face with somebody. So we see very hurtful things happening on social media. And we see young people, and I've seen it even younger than the emerging adults, kind of living in their social media in a world that's not really real. It's not like having friendships and conversations face-to-face.
Culture, we know, has a major impact in just about every aspect of one's existence.
What role does culture play at this junction?
Well, I think, you know, socioeconomic issues play a part in this, for this particular developmental phase. Having money doesn't protect you necessarily from psychological distress, but certainly it gives you some padding and some currency to not be wondering if you're going to have a roof over your head or if you're going to have a meal, you know, where your next meal is coming from. But the cultural impact of many things that are happening in our society right now, the gun violence, victimization of many kinds, and we have the natural disasters that are coming and that aren't really cultural, but I'm thinking right now in my head of Texas and what's going on there with those young children that have been lost. If the young adult is a brother or sister of those little kids, it has an impact. Discrimination, and boy, we could spend an hour on discrimination. Certainly racial discrimination, the LGBTQ community that, you know, for all intents and purposes, is becoming more and more afraid to step outside of their homes for fear of what's going to happen. The immigrants, you know, the young adults who are immigrants, children of immigrants, and the discrimination. Do I go outside today and risk being pulled off the streets? How do I handle this? So there are many pressures that way. And then we have the legal decisions that are coming out of our culture and just the deepening political divisions that these young adults aren't quite equipped to handle. I'm not sure any of us are, but just the divisiveness and the nastiness that has come into play has been very difficult. And it has an impact on an already vulnerable individual who is feeling anxious about moving on in the world, might be feeling depressed or hopeless about their options. It all has an impact.
I think also, you kind of alluded to this, that these young adults may inside somewhere know that they need some outside help, you know, but they don't know how to ask for it. We're going to take a brief break, and when we return, I'd like to have us look at just what happened. So what it looks like when a young adult is in distress but doesn't know how to ask for help. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, where we explore issues and concepts and ideas that help us better understand our families, communities, and ourselves. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and this edition of 411 Teen is talking with Dr. Michael Crawford, offering parents a roadmap to staying connected and grounded as their children navigate complex years of emerging adulthood. Dr. Crawford, we were just talking about what it's like for this young adult who's going through all these changes, multiple stressors, know they might need some help, know something's not right, they're not feeling right, but they don't know how to ask for help. What does a parent do then? What do they do? I mean, you know, how do we as parents, adults, in their lives, how do we connect with them?
It's a great question. I think we have to first be real aware that what we don't do, when we talk about in the book, The Pivoting Wheel, we talk about parents starting out as caretakers and then shifting to the coach role, the wise counsel, and then eventually, hopefully, the calm peer. But we talk about a parent needing to know how, when to step in, when they see something that upsets them or that they feel is not quite right, but without taking away their young adult's autonomy. Mm-hmm. It's a balancing act between wanting to step in and say, I'd like to help. What is it that you need right now? Versus let me just barrel in and take care of the situation, which we do when they're little.
We do it, yeah. and we continue to try to do it even when they're big.
We certainly do. We certainly do, even when we know better.
Right,
but,
right.
But it's really important for a parent to understand that they want to, they can be helpful, but they also need to support their young adult's autonomy. The young adult legally can be in the driver's seat of their life. They're not ready for that 100%. But how much can we sit in the passenger seat and offer mm-hmm. some advice mm-hmm. without taking over the steering wheel mm-hmm. and trying to drive the car? Because that's not what you want to do with a young adult. You really want to, try and help them start to figure out for themselves what it is they need. They won't necessarily come to you for help. And so it's more incumbent upon the parent mm-hmm. to be watching and waiting, and perhaps asking, is everything okay? How are you doing?
What role do you think, that shame plays a role in with parents or with the emerging adult? Do you think that plays a role in preventing them from getting help? Just what role does shame play, or does it have a role at all?
I think it does have a role. I think the young adult may be in the position of thinking for them to themselves, I should be able to do this. Mm-hmm. I should be able mm-hmm. to do this on my own. And the parent may be in a position of thinking, I don't know what to do. I'm not sure how to help my kid. So maybe I should do this or maybe I should do that. What did my parents do? It was not helpful to me. So how can I help my child? And I think shame, when you think about if my child's not doing well, and all my friends' kids seem to be doing well, what's wrong with me? Mm-hmm. What did I do wrong? How do I talk with them about my child when they are really struggling? And that, I think all of that has a shame piece to it.
And I also think that trauma, whether it's past or present, amplifies a young person's struggle. Where do you sit on that?
I agree with that. And I think also it amplifies the parent's struggle. Mm-hmm. Whatever went on in the parent's mm-hmm. life, and we talk about that, deal with your own past, deal with your own stuff so that you're freed up to help your young adult do that too. Mm-hmm. There are many ways that a young adult can be traumatized. Some of the things I mentioned earlier, natural disasters, gun violence, discrimination. There's so many ways that they can have an experience of trauma. And when that happens, will they reach out for help or will they shrink away mm-hmm. from help? I think trauma is very much involved there. But I would also caution that we not use trauma too loosely, because I think trauma, somebody could say, oh, I broke my fingernail. It's so traumatic, which, yeah. Okay, maybe for them it is. But there are, big, significant trauma events in a young person's life. Mm-hmm. And some that are not so big, but can be traumatizing for the individual. Trauma doesn't mean the same thing to everyone. And for some people get through something that another person would really struggle with. So we have to factor that in as well. It doesn't mean the same thing to everybody.
Do you have suggestions that you may offer to help a parent differentiate between a phase and a serious problem?
Mm-hmm. I think, well, you have to kind of work with the timeline of what's going on with your young adult. They may come into young adulthood already with some significant mental health concerns or issues. So if they're just kind of bringing it along in their life, it's not so much a phase as something that's been there for a while, and it certainly needs to be paid attention to. But at the same time, this population tends to be reckless, tends to take chances. And so is that a phase kind of behavior that's going to go away? Or is that something that is going to need more long-term attention to deal with it? And I think when you look at the, what do we call it? The trajectory of the young person's life, you have to understand where your child's history, your young adult's history, in order to fully understand what's going on in the moment. I would always caution a parent to not jump to conclusions, but to pay attention, because the parent knows their son or daughter best. The parent knows that their young adult is likely to come through or may struggle more. And because they know their own young adult best, they're in a position to say, no, this bothers me, and I need to attend to it. This is something more important than just a quirky thing that they're doing, that they're going through.
Mm-hmm. At what point, and I know this has to be handled very gingerly, should parents seek professional help? And if they do seek this help, what kind of help should they seek? Because one thing that parents need to always remember is they have to have their son or their daughter buying into this help, or it's not going to be any help at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So unless it may be helpful to that parent to just get counseling and advice as far as their own coping with it. But anyhow, I'm going off, but I'm thinking as I'm talking to you. So at what point should parents seek professional help, and what kind of help should they pursue?
Okay. And you're sort of, you've tapped into my question back to you for themselves or for their young adult, because it may be that both people mm-hmm. need help.
Well, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll look at both.
So the parent may need to get some professional help just to figure out for themselves what's going on here. What do I need to be aware of as a parent, but also for myself? And sometimes this stirs up their own history. Something is going on mm-hmm. from their history, and it's interfering with their ability to see clearly what's going on with their young adult. But in terms of the young adult, if you're looking at your young adult and you're very concerned about their behavior, you may, again, seeking help for yourself to say, is this something I should be worried about? And perhaps the person they talk to says, yeah, you may want to look at that a little bit more. Getting the young adult to buy in, as you said, is the key. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of young people say, I don't need that.
Exactly.
I'm not going to a shrink. Mm-hmm. You know, are you crazy? I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. And they may have had bad experiences before. And so they're doubly not going to do that. And you can lead the horse to water. You cannot make it drink. And you doubly cannot take a young adult into treatment against their will. So
exactly. I've seen a lot of that. Excuse me. I'm seeing a lot of that, you know, or the parent who feels like it's their problem. It's not,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's mm-hmm. not my, it's their problem. Well, you know, you're all in this. It takes a village, okay?
It does. It does indeed.
You play a role in this too, okay? Not really pointing fingers at parents, but hey, you got to look at the whole picture. You can't compartmentalize and just, you know, say it's just the child or that they have a problem. You alluded mm-hmm. to this earlier and said, but would you share some of the common ways that young adults cope poorly with stress?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, thinking about the dragons that I mentioned, mm-hmm. they may turn to substances as a way to numb themselves from the stress that they're feeling. They may turn to social media and isolate from other people as a way to handle it. They may engage in risky behaviors, risky sexual behaviors, risky driving, just something to help them feel a little bit more in control. So there's a number of ways that they can do it. Sadly, some of them will start acting out suicidal behaviors mm-hmm. or self-injury as a way to try to deal with the stress that they're feeling. So there are some very dangerous ways, obviously, that they can do this. But a lot of times, parents won't always see it initially, because if they drank in high school, and I know that kids do, they use marijuana or other drugs in high school, or they're getting into that, parents don't always see that right away. And drinking is more socially sanctioned, sadly, than using some other drugs. Smoking pot has become so prolific everywhere that, you know, oh, it's just pot. It's not going to hurt anything. But these are the beginnings of perhaps a slippery slope for the young adult as they struggle to handle what's going on. We hope they would come to us and say, I'm really struggling. But that doesn't happen very often. So sometimes we have to watch and try to figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and I am talking with Dr. Michael Crawford. She is the author, or one of the co-authors, of The Parent Pivot, What to Do When Your Young Adult is in Psychological Distress. We've been talking and talking. Share with us and the listening audience exactly where they can get your book. I know it was released. It came out in May 20th, around there sometime.
Mm-hmm. Came out on May 20th. Yep. It's available at, at Amazon, at the APA publications, at Barnes & Noble, and Goodreads. Mm-hmm. There are multiple places to be able to get it. We're trying to bring it into local bookstores, and that takes some time.
Yes. Okay. Well, I just wanted them, their listening audience, to hear, you know, all of this information. They might want to pick up the book. It's highly recommended, but well written, very thorough, concise, and I certainly enjoyed it. I thought it was done well, so I commend you and your co-authors on it.
Thank you.
Parents, it's important for parents to regulate their own emotions during this difficult time. Would you address the significance and the importance of parents being in control of themselves? Because if they aren't in control, they certainly can't help their they might think they can, but, you know, I've seen parents just totally lose it. And I'm like, well, who's in here for what? Wait a minute. But would you share, you know, how important it is for parents to regulate, and it is a difficult time. I'm not belittling that, to regulate their own emotions during these difficult times.
Absolutely. Emotion regulation is one of the skills that we talk about in the book. Before that, I want to say that we also provide a lot of tips about breathing, which mm-hmm. is a component of emotional regulation. Being able to calm yourself down. We all know if we go into an argument fired up and ready to shoot all our guns, we're not going to get very far. The ability to remain calm and listen to the other person is essential.
Say that again, please. I hate to interrupt you, but listening, you know, communication is not just running your mouth.
Okay? No. It's a matter of fact, the most important gift I believe you can give another person is to sit and deeply listen to what they're saying. In the heat of the moment, it's very difficult to do. But as if we can learn, and we learn this, this is the process. We're not all built to be calm and emotionally regulated all the time. But if we can learn to take some deep breaths, to channel our energy away from conflict and pull back a bit and just breathe in and breathe out, and then listen to what the other person's saying. It's very difficult when your young person comes to you and says, I've decided I'm going to quit my job and move to Alaska because my best friend's going to. And you're going, what? and, you know, and that's your reaction. However, taking a deep breath and saying something a little calmer, such as, wow, where did I'm not sure where this came from. Tell me more about it. Give me more information. What brought you to this conclusion? Trying to be more responsive. You don't want to just react. And when a young person says something, you want to be able to take a beat and then decide what you're going to say. And it's not, again, it's not easy to do. In the heat of the moment, you're thinking, I spent all this money helping set up your apartment or whatever, or paying for college, and now you want to quit? What are you, crazy? that's what you want to say.
Well, hold your thoughts. I've been talking with Dr. Michael Crawford, co-author of The Parent Pivot, supporting your young adult child through emotional distress. We're going to take a brief break and we'll return to continue our conversation shortly. It's time for Reflections with Raphael, a commentary from Raphael Holifield Wimmer, an honor student and gifted musician at the esteemed Girard Academic Music Program in Philadelphia, where he blends intellect with creativity. Whether he's striking keys, sounding drums, or sharing ideas, Raphael brings insight with rhythm, thought with heart, and a fresh perspective you won't want to miss, reminding us that wisdom isn't just a matter of age, it's a matter of vision.
Hey y'all, I'm Raphael, and this is Raphael's Reflection. Today I will be talking about how challenging it can be to go from being a college student to living on your own as an adult, and how difficult it can be for the parents who are trying to support their children to become independent adults. I like to think about this phase as a sort of passageway into a new part of many people's lives. I mean, according to the law, you're an adult as soon as you're 18, when most people are just starting college. However, people move at their own pace, and that is definitely true when it comes to learning how to live on your own. I believe that how someone behaves growing up regarding school and their workload can very well affect how they behave in college, and that children who are exposed to more independence at a younger age end up doing better in college because they're better at handling the workload. For example, I'm 14, and I regularly do almost all of the easier chores around the house, like washing dishes and taking out the trash, and I'm still expected to find time to do my schoolwork and practice piano. I rarely ask for any help. My friend Salim, on the other hand, is a very dependent person and is not afraid to ask for help from almost anybody. He simply prefers asking for help over working through everything himself. Assuming that we both stick to our current behaviors through college, I would be the kind of person to do well independently, and he would be the kind of person who needs more help. The way people approach this time in their lives can fall on a spectrum. On one end, you have the most extreme version of me, living by themselves and never asking for a thing, just flying through and living life. Then on the other end, there are people closer to my friend Salim who prefer a lot more help and support from their parents or maybe even professors in order to start their adult life. I also think it's important to consider how all of this affects the parents. They have supported this child for 18 years and finally get them out the house just for them to come back and live with them a couple years later. It's understandable that these parents are exasperated. I feel like if parents began making their children be just a little bit more independent, starting even around my age or throughout high school, this whole situation could be avoided. I also want to say before I go that I know I've had some strong opinions on this segment, and I just want to make it very clear I'm not telling anyone what to do, and I'm not trying to offend anybody. I'm just stating what I've observed. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed my reflection.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I have been talking with Dr. Michael Crawford, co-author of The Parent Pivot. Dr. Crawford, we were talking about parents. Can you share, and you really have touched on it, but again, I think it helps when I just directly ask the question again. Share some of the mistakes that parents often make when trying to fix things.
Okay. Well, I think one of the mistakes might be trying to fix it. because as a caretaker, you jump in and you fix it. Mm-hmm. You fix the problem.
Right.
That's problematic on several levels. The key thing being that it doesn't allow the young adult the autonomy to try to figure out what they're going to do and how they might fix it themselves. Jumping into fixing things doesn't help them. I think of the book that I read many years ago, The Blessings of a Skinned Knee. When your child falls down, if you let them get back up again, they learn that they can get back up again. But if you run over and pick up the little person and say, oh, here, did that hurt? I'm so sorry. They don't learn to get up on their own. And so I think parents fall into the trap of wanting to jump in and fix it mm-hmm. because of course they have more experience. Of course they might have a really good solution, but that doesn't necessarily help their young adult. Or they could get angry. You know, they could get mm-hmm. angry and say, well, mm-hmm. you got yourself in this mess. Now you get yourself out. You know, either one jumping in to do for or totally pulling away from the young adult, not good options because they're not supporting the young adult where they are. They're not trying to, again, if we use that scaffolding idea, give them the support that they need while they work through whatever it is they're trying to figure out in their lives.
Mm-hmm. I think another thing that parents need to realize that the approach that they used when they were 12, when the child was 12, or 14, or mm-hmm. 22, is not the approach. That's going, it's not the same approach. I mean, would you agree?
Yeah.
They're going to have to, you know, fall back and, you know, punt, okay? That's what they need to do, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Comments?
Yeah, I think that's very true. I believe that you can turn back to care. You can pivot to caretaker when your young adult has a serious situation. Let's say they get sick. Or they're in an accident or something, you are going to pivot back to caretaker. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to be the same caretaker as when they were 2 or 5 or 10. You're going to try to do what you can to care for them while they're coming through this particular crisis or whatever. But it's not going to be the same. And you don't want to stay in caretaker forever. Mm-hmm. It's not a good place to be. It's comfortable for many parents to be in caretaker because then there's that sense of I'm in control of this.
Right.
I'm in charge of their life. But this is a young adult and they need to be moving out into the world and making their own decisions and having the autonomy to do that. So that caretaking role, while it can feel pretty good for the parent, for some parents anyway, and we talk about helicopter parenting, the hoverers that come in and just want to do everything for their children, doesn't really work well with young adults, because then the young adult doesn't know how to do their laundry, or, right. you know, or yeah. how, I mean, I've seen young people in the dormitories who put in a whole box of soap because they've never washed their own clothes soap. Before. or they don't know how, you know, how do I get a bank account? Or what do you mean I have more checks? What do you mean there's no money in my bank account? You know, they haven't learned to do it for themselves. And so they're at a total loss when they're out on their own. And that's what we don't want to create. And I think we have a lot of young people who unfortunately fit that bill. They're not able to do for themselves because everything has been done for them. And mom and dad have flown in and taken care of it mm-hmm. if there's been any kind of problem. That's not healthy for anyone.
I want to look in these last minutes more at pivoting, mm-hmm. you know, and what it really means practically, because we're talking about shifting, mm-hmm. shifting from manager to mentor, shifting mm-hmm. from control to a different type of connection. So let's, mm-hmm. first of all, share exactly in a practical way what it means for a parent to pivot.
To pivot. Pivoting, and we talk about having your pivoting wheel well greased. Mm-hmm. Pivoting is adjusting or adapting to a new situation with your young adult, to moving so that your role is changing with your young adult. When you pivot from caretaker to coach, mm-hmm. you're moving into a new role with new skills. You still have the caretaking skills, but you're adding on to it. And so each time you pivot, you are adjusting to the needs of the situation and your young adult wherever they are in their life. Mm-hmm. So you're moving from one set of circumstances, if you will, to another one. And you adapt. To pivot in its very basic form is just to adapt to the needs of the situation, to be able to move and shift as the ground changes. And that's what we're talking about when you're working with your young adult.
How can parents shift from manager to mentor while still staying connected and maintaining that connection?
I think the connection grows if you're able to pivot and to shift, because the connection is different now that you're out of caretaker, but it can still be a connection that you and your young adult can respect each other, and they can be thankful to have you there, but not holding their hand at every turn. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think it's hard to let go. You know, for a parent, it's very hard to let go. But as we can let go and give our young adult the autonomy to kind of work through situations that they're capable of working through, that can strengthen the connection that we have with them. We learn to listen differently. We learn to communicate differently. We learn to have conversations that are not combative or conflict-ridden. If we go about it thinking that we have to be in control of their lives, though, I think that creates more conflict in our interactions with our young adults, because they are this age group is ready to go. Mm-hmm. I mean, they want to get out and test the waters, but they're also really nervous about that. So they want to get out, but they need to know that there is a net for them mm-hmm. at home. They're still, mm-hmm. people still care about them. People are still there and willing to help. And in an ideal world, they would test the water and go deeper and deeper. But they know that whoever raised them and took care of them is still there and is not going to go away.
When does a parent offer help and when do they hold back?
I guess that is a great question.
Yeah, it is.
I think every young adult is different. Every parenting situation is different. You offer help when you believe that your young adult is really struggling, is mm-hmm. really in trouble, mm-hmm. may not be able to pull themselves out. And the help may be just to listen. The help may be to sit with them and say, what's going on? To validate what they're going through, validate their feelings about what's going on in their life and how they're struggling. If you've built a good relationship with them, it's going to be easier to do, obviously, than if you're trying to build a good relationship after years of a lot of volatility. So you reach out when you think they're struggling, but you also don't reach out and take over any more than what they need you to do. I think back to Adlerian psychology. You help your child, you do for them, but then you pull back and let them do. And you don't take over every aspect of the situation and try to manage every aspect of their lives. They don't like that. Mm-hmm. Even though they need help, even though they may be struggling, they don't necessarily want you to do it all for them. They right. just, they need somebody to listen and to help figure out together with them what needs to happen. And it's, again, every parenting situation is going to be different. Every young adult is different. So there's not a one size fits all.
Is there one piece of advice you'd like to offer to parents who feel they failed?
Yes. Well, first of all, I would tell them just breathe. Mm-hmm. You're not responsible for the choices that your young adult is making. And so breathe and find somebody to talk to about your feelings. It could be a friend. It could be a family member. It could be a professional. I would go with a professional because they don't have the emotional connection and can be more objective. But just talk with somebody about your feelings, because parents aren't failures for the most part. Parents do the very best that they can. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But don't beat up on yourself.
Are there any resources in addition that you would recommend, you know, beyond your book, for listening parents? Any resources, other resources that you recommend?
We hesitate to recommend websites and things mm-hmm. because you never know if you're going down a rabbit hole. I think in addition to our book, though, I would, if parents are struggling, there are support resources within most communities. If they're struggling with mental health issues or whatever, certainly NAMI is a great support. Mm-hmm. I think there are, again, I hesitate to recommend websites.
Okay. Well, I just, you know, if you just had anything, and I didn't know, that's fine. I didn't want to put you in the hot seat or anything. I just, you know, if you had anything else yeah. that you might, you know, recommend to parents. Of course, your book is pretty thorough. And I mean, if they get a good command of your book, they'll be in good shape right there. It's clear that parenting does not stop at age 18. Parents yeah. must, because what you're saying in the book is parents have got to continue to evolve too. You know, as the children grow, so much the capacity for the children, or the parents' capacity for listening and empathy and grace must grow, because that's a real key. That's kind of what I kind of got out of the book, in addition to other things. But those are really very important for evolution, put it that way.
Mm-hmm. It's a parallel process. As our young adults are growing, we are growing too. And we don't have to grow apart, but we have to be able to pull back from the way we were and see, pivot mm-hmm. to a new way of understanding our role around our young adult. I think that's so true.
And it's not easy because we have been, you know, the caregiver, and we, and all of a sudden, you know, they may not consult us like they have been, okay?
They don't seem to need us,
okay? Well, listen, it's been a delight talking with you. I mean, I really appreciate you. To my listening audience, it's time out. You've been listening to a conversation with Dr. Michael Crawford, co-author of The Parent Pivot, Supporting Your Young Adult Child Through Emotional Distress. Thank you, Dr. Crawford, for encouraging us to lean into the continued challenges of parenting. And much appreciation to my listeners for the privilege of your time and ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. The 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Evan Rossi. If you would like to participate in the 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. You can listen to previous episodes of 411 Team at WFSU.org.